Coming up on Dr. Kiki's Science Hour, we're talking about the science of toxic flame retardants with Dr. Arlene Bloom. That's up next on Dr. Kiki's Science Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Dr. Kiki's Science Hour is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Dr. Kiki's Science Hour with Dr. Kiki Sanford, episode 145, recorded Thursday, May 24th, 2012. Chemical warfare at home. This episode of Dr. Kiki's Science Hour is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Welcome, everyone, to Dr. Kiki's Science Hour. I'm Dr. Kiki, and this is the show where you get to sit back, relax, and enjoy science for an entire hour. One interview with one expert and one topic for 1 hour. And I do hope that you enjoy today's show. Get ready, buckle your seatbelts in your easy chair, and relax, listen, open your minds for the science of the chemicals in your home. We're going to be talking today with our guest, Dr. Arlene Bloom from UC Berkeley, and she is a biophysical chemist, author, and mountaineer. I'm looking forward to talking to her in just a little bit. But first, a few science headlines. It is May 24th, 2012, and these are the science stories that made headlines this week. New research in the journal Neurons suggests that your brain might be set up to eat itself. Well, particular cells called microglia are responsible for pruning away unnecessary synapses, helping to make your brain more efficient. Researchers from Boston Children's Hospital found that microglia have receptors for a complement protein that's found on some synapses called C3, which they described as an eat me signal. This finding could also pave the way toward greater understanding of neurodegenerative and developmental disorders. A related study in developmental cell reports that damage to neurons in the brain results in a wave of calcium ions that spreads out from the point of injury. Microglia respond to that signal and follow the calcium breadcrumbs back to the site in order to engulf dead cells. Experiments show that the neurotransmitter glutamate is ultimately responsible for this calcium wave. The following story is an excuse for you to take a walk or a bath or, you know, anything relaxing that lets your mind wander. Undemanding tasks that allow your mind to wander might be as good for fostering creativity as REM sleep, finds a study soon to be published in the journal Psychological Science. The UC Riverside team discovered that students who engaged in an undemanding activity for 12 minutes after completing two cognitively demanding tasks of creativity performed 41% better when retested on the tasks than other groups of students who either rested, undertook a demanding memory activity, or had no break at all. So rest up. It's good for you. In another example of why this is a great time to be a mouse, Spanish scientists used gene therapy to increase mouse lifespan by up to 24%. The gene for telomerase was inserted into 1- and 2-year-old mice with a viral vector. The one-year-old saw lifespan increases of 24%, while the 2-year-old's lives were extended by 13%. Additionally, the mice experienced fewer symptoms associated with aging. The Kepler Observatory released evidence of a planet's demise through evaporation this week. The planet orbits very close to its star, known as KIC 12557548. So close, in fact, that it is literally evaporating away as temperatures on its surface reach up to 3,600 degrees Fahrenheit. The gas and dust wicking away from the planet into space is what first brought the doomed ball to astronomers' attention. Swedish researchers presented evidence that phthalates from PVC flooring materials can be absorbed into the bodies of infants from dust that is ingested, breathed, or absorbed through the skin. Urine from babies between 2 and 6 months old was analyzed for phthalate levels, which were found to be higher in babies from homes with PVC flooring. A study in International Geology Review used earthquake activity at the Dead Sea to pinpoint the day of Jesus' crucifixion. Additionally, factoring in the Jewish calendar and astronomical calculations, it allowed researchers to conclude that Friday, April 3rd, 33 AD, was the best historical match. A World Health Organization report states that most of Japan has radiation levels below what is known to normally cause cancer at 0.1 to 1 millisieverts. Two locations near the Fukushima power plant are exposed to 10 to 50 millisieverts, while the rest of the Fukushima area has levels in the 1 to 10 millisievert range. The journal Science reports that Mars has had abundant organic chemistry throughout its history and is stocked with the building blocks for life: reduced carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen. However, the carbon came from volcanic activity rather than from other life forms or from contamination by Earth. And after a last-second cancellation on May 19th, SpaceX launched a Falcon 9 rocket into space without a hiccup on a historical day, Tuesday, May 22nd at 3:44 a.m. Eastern Time from Cape Canaveral, Florida. The rocket delivered a Dragon cargo spacecraft into orbit, and the Dragon has since performed two flybys of the International Space Station in preparation for its eventual docking on Friday, which I'm looking forward to hearing how that goes, and we'll keep you updated next week. Tell me what you think should be news by emailing me at drkiki@drkiki.tv or send me a voicemail, 650-741-5454. This episode of Dr. Kiki's Science Hour is brought to you by Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, which means that you save time, money, and hassle. And all of those things are great things to save, right? There are several easy ways to instantly access streaming movies and TV shows with Netflix. You can watch Netflix movies and TV shows on your Mac, your PC, an iPad. There is an iPad app, which is really great. You can watch on your iPhone using an iPhone app. And some Android phones have apps that are available as well. If you have a gaming console, an Xbox 360, PS3, Nintendo Wii, you can watch Netflix right on your TV. If you're not a gamer, maybe you don't have kids, right? If you're not a gamer, you can watch Netflix on your TV with an Apple TV or a Roku box. They're inexpensive and very easy to use. And with Netflix, you can watch movies and TV shows instantly using any of these devices. And their seamless interface just makes it such a great experience. You can start watching on one device, stop at any point that you have to, leave, maybe pick it up on another device right where you left off, and continue watching. It's just a wonderful service. Whichever way you choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies and TV shows as you want, anytime you want, and you can cancel anytime for free. Netflix is offering 30 days for free to anyone who wants to sign up right now. Go to netflix.com/twit. Be sure to use this URL when you sign up for your free 30-day trial. It's netflix.com/twit. We thank Netflix for their support of Twit and Dr. Kiki's Science Hour and hope that you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. Now it's time to get back to Dr. Kiki's Science Hour. Like to welcome my guest, Dr. Arlene Bloom. She is a biophysical chemist, author, and mountaineer. She holds a doctorate in biophysical chemistry and is taught at Stanford University, Wellesley College, and UC Berkeley, where her research was instrumental in banning tris and phyrol, two cancer-causing chemicals that were used as flame retardants on children's sleep well, as well as the pesticide DBCP. Blum plans to continue this research to facilitate the regulation of similar chemicals and help protect our health and environment. And in full disclosure, I met Arlene at the Conference on World Affairs in Boulder, Colorado, where we shared a panel on life in a technological age, which was actually a lot of fun. Arlene, it's great to see you again.
Great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you on the show. And this week is a very, or the last couple of weeks actually, has been really active for you. And I want to get to all of this really exciting news eventually. But to start off, can you tell people specifically what it is to be a biophysical chemist and how you use science?
Well, biophysical chemists are physical chemists who look at biological molecules and look at their structure, their function, and try to predict what's going to happen based on structure and function. But what I'm doing now is quite different. I do science policy, so my goal now is to take the very best science and bring it to decision makers to protect our health and environment.
And currently, you have been for quite a while. You've been working on flame retardant chemicals that are used in all sorts of products that we have in our homes and our lives.
Yes. Well, I have in addition to being a visiting scholar at UC Berkeley, I have a nonprofit called the Green Science Policy Institute. And our goal, as I said, is to bring good science to decision makers. And we've been particularly working with flame retardants. And in fact, that happened a long time ago. The story started in the 70s. I'm a mountain climber, and a friend who was an early environmentalist died climbing. And in his memory, I wanted to do something for the environment. And I heard that there was a flame retardant that was used in children's sleepwear. And in fact, it was like 10% of the weight of the sleepwear. And people were worried, did it get into the children? So we found a child who had never worn the treated sleepwear. The chemical is called Tris. And so we put the child into Tris pajamas. And the next morning, there were Tris breakdown products in her urine. So in America, foods, drugs, and pesticides are regulated, but other chemicals like flame retardants, there's no regulation. And it turned out that this flame retardant that was going from the pajamas into the child was a strong mutagen. It changed DNA, and it caused cancer.
Oh, wow.
So that's how it all started. And we actually wrote a lead article in Science magazine with a subtitle saying the main flame retardant in children's pajamas is a mutagen and should not be used. And that's a pretty strong statement for scientists. Scientists, you know, at the end of most science papers, what do all science papers call for at the end always? What's the next step?
More research is required.
Exactly. That is always the line. So this was quite unusual. And we did about two experiments, and then we made a strong recommendation that Tris should not be used in kids' pajamas. And then that's what happened. Tris was removed from kids' pajamas like 3 months after we wrote our science paper.
That's so amazing. And that's really fast action. Is that unusual for chemicals that we use and finding evidence that's just so pretty much unquestioned?
I'd say it's unprecedented and very unusual, and it doesn't happen anymore. The story that's kind of shocking is the same Tris that was removed from kids' pajamas is the number one chemical today in furniture and foam in baby products. So like a nursing pillow with an organic cotton cover might inside contain 5% Tris, or a baby changing pad might contain 10-12% Tris by weight. And a couch might have as much as 2 pounds of Tris in it. And nowadays, regulating a chemical can take years.
Yeah.
There's a chemical called DECA that people spend about 8 years regulating. It's finally being phased out. The DECA ether is being phased out, but it's being replaced by the DECA ethane, which has virtually the same structure. So now it's really very, very hard to regulate chemicals. The system's pretty much broken.
Which is really unfortunate for the public. I mean,
everything on the planet has all these toxic chemicals in them that don't need to be there. It's very, very sad. And chemicals should not go out into the world until there's been some basic health and safety checks. And it's not like that now. It's the opposite. The EPA can know that a chemical is harmful, and they're powerless to do anything, or very little.
So Tris is a pretty, it's the chemical, it's pretty patent dried. It's just the we know that it's a mutagen. It was easily taken out of children's sleepwear, but it's currently still being used in, as you said, a bunch of furniture and children's products. What is the purpose of having it in those products if we know that it is mutagenic?
And there's no fire safety benefit.
And so there is no fire safety benefit?
Not the way it's used in the products, no. The purpose is to make a profit for three companies who sell it. That's the reason it's there. It's very sad.
Can you explain a little bit about the tests that are done to show for flame retardants and
to show there's no fire safety benefit? We can do a little thought experiment right now and you'll understand. Yeah. So the reason Tris is there is because of a furniture flammability standard. It's actually a California standard, but it's followed pretty much throughout North America. And the standard is that the foam inside your couch will not burn for 12 seconds when exposed to a very small flame. So if you do a little thought experiment and you imagine dropping a candle on your couch, what will burn first?
The couch cover?
The couch cover. So the cover starts burning. So then you have a big flame. And the big flame hits the foam, which contains Tris. And then the Tris only delays the fire maybe 2 seconds. So you get a very small benefit, 2 seconds delay. However, when things burn normally, you get carbon dioxide and water, which are harmless. But when things burn in the presence of Tris or other flame retardants, you get much more carbon monoxide, soot, and smoke, up to 50 times more. And what do you think kills you in fires?
Well, I know that humans are affected very strongly by carbon monoxide and that the smoke from fires leads to a lot more death than the fires themselves.
Right. So you're getting 2 seconds delay and you're getting, you know, 5 to 50 times more toxic gases and smoke. That's what you get from the flame retardants. And indeed, the flame retardants, they started using them a lot in about 1980, and they're meant to protect against small open flame fires. And as it turns out, the amount of fire deaths from small open flame fires has remained completely constant since 1980. There's been no change, even though now all of our furniture is full of these toxic flame retardants, but there's no fire safety benefit. And indeed, fire scientists have said that it doesn't make the fire burn any cooler to have the flame retardants. It's not like less heat is given off. There's really no change, except a few seconds delay. And that's pretty well established among fire scientists.
So what problems are you running into? What roadblocks are you running into at this point in time? Is it just a political lobbying difficulty? Or you mentioned the system's broken. Where is it broken?
Well, at many places, but in California, for 5 years, we've had legislation sponsored by Mark Leno. That might be your state senator. Have you heard of him?
Yes.
Okay, so 5 years we've had legislation to change the California Furniture Flammability Standard to have increased fire safety by having a smolder standard for fabric. Fabric is where fires start. Most fires are started by cigarettes, so there would be increased fire safety with no chemicals. What's not to like? And there's been a documented $23 million spent by the chemical industry preventing California from moving to greater fire safety without toxic chemicals.
And
so
Tris
that's
is
a
not,
sad story.
Yeah, and Tris is not the only chemical. What other chemicals are you mentioned DECA? What other chemicals are we looking at?
Well, one of the toughest. So very few chemicals are regulated or have been regulated. The sort of chemical I work on are called organohalogens, where you have carbon bonded to bromine, chlorine, or fluorine. That's a very strong bond. And organohalogens tend to be lipophilic, fat-loving. They tend to migrate into our body fat and stay there. So examples of organohalogens are pesticides like DDT, Mirex, Dieldrin, Aldrin that were all banned in the 80s, but they're still around because they're very long-lived. Mm-hmm. And these chemicals were globally banned by the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants. 21 chemicals have been globally banned, where 180 countries agree that the chemicals are a problem. And they're all organohalogens, and they're mostly organohalogen pesticides and organohalogen flame retardants. And in some cases, flame retardants and pesticides are the same thing. They're very closely related in structure. Murex was banned in the 80s, harmful pesticide. There's a flame retardant called dechlorane that's exactly the same as Murex. We don't have dechlorane, but we have dechlorane plus, which is dechlorane plus two extra carbons. So it's a real problem because these chemicals, the reason we have these chemicals is because they're highly profitable. The companies, three companies make them. They have a global monopoly. They can charge whatever they want. They recently had a press release saying they were raising their prices 25% to pay for advocacy. But I am actually optimistic. You know, as you said, a lot's been happening, and I think the word is out. But both at a California level, we need to change our flammability standard, and I think we will. And then federally, we need to have what's called TSCA reform. We have one law in America that regulates chemicals before they're out in the environment. It's called the Toxic Substances Control Act, or TSCA. Mm-hmm. It was passed in the 70s. And at the time, 60,000 chemicals were grandfathered, like, you're okay. And those can't be regulated. For example, asbestos kills about 10,000 people a year, but the EPA cannot regulate asbestos. So the EPA just does not have the authority it needs to protect our health. And so there is legislation to give the EPA that authority. But unfortunately, it's opposed by the chemical industry, who, you know, prefer to be able to continue to put whatever the chemicals they want in our products. And what's in our products ends up in us and our pets and wild animals and everything.
Yeah. So the organohalogens, they're persistent in the environment. They build up in species like us, where we're at the top of the food chain. We know that something like TRIS is mutagenic. How many of the different compounds that we're looking at actually have known health effects that we see, say, developmental effects, neural effects, cancer-causing effects?
Are you talking, well, you know, if you're talking about the big picture, that big 80,000 chemicals out there, I have what I consider a more optimistic view of them, that most chemicals are fine. They don't cause trouble. And there's a few classes that are problematic. I mean, I talk about four classes, and I think we're starting to deal with them. And so if you think about that, a lot of the chemicals that are problems are solvents, you know, like toluene and benzene. And, and we know about them. There are many healthy building sorts of certifications for not having volatile chemicals. And then there are a class of metals. You know, we don't want lead or chromium or arsenic. So there are a number of metals that are problematic. And then there's endocrine disruptors. We've heard a lot about bisphenol A and phthalates. And then finally, the chemicals I work on, the organohalogens, they're what's called semi-volatile organic chemicals, or SVOCs. And so they come out of products like our furniture, and they're heavy. They drop into dust.
So when you hear about off-gassing, when you buy, say, a new carpet or a new couch and you have that kind of smell that's in your house, the off-gassing of the product, is that the...
probably the VOCs, the volatile organics, because they stay in the air and you smell them. The SVOCs are heavy and they drop down into dust. But the good news is there are these four classes, and I mean, there are certainly other chemicals that are problematic, but I think if we could make headway on these four classes, which is, you know, we know these chemicals, and I think we can make headway, and we're starting to, that we can all be healthier. You know, everything on the planet will be much healthier without these chemicals in their bodies. And so I think if we think about it that way, we can make a lot of progress on the toxic chemical problem. You know, if we go, there's 80,000 chemicals out there and we don't know anything about them, you know, then it's so hopeless. All we can do is kind of, you know, get poisoned. But if we say there's a small number
what do you
of
do?
Classes, right. And so that's what I think, that we should talk about. We can solve, you know, as you said, the VOCs that you smell that come out of things, the metals, the endocrine disruptors, and then the semi-volatile organics. So those four classes. So I think it can be solved, and I think good science is really important for solving it.
Yeah. What's currently being done with the SVOCs? Are they being looked at as a class? I mean, you're obviously treating them that way. But in terms of the research, how are scientists approaching it?
I don't think people are looking at classes yet, but maybe they will. I'm kind of an advocate for it. So I think people are looking at metals and endocrine disruptors and solvents, but I'm not sure they've started looking at SVOCs as much as they could.
In the recent news, can you tell us, we mentioned at the top of the hour that there have been some really great headway, some really neat activity this week. And there's an article in the Chicago Sun-Times that came out this week. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's the Chicago Tribune.
And it's Chicago Tribune.
It's pretty awesome. It's I wonder if I can hold it up for you. I have it here. Let's try. Let's see how this works. See if I can find the right one. Okay, here we go. So this was the full front page of the Chicago Tribune. Let's see. How
Chicago
am I doing?
Tribune.
Can you
Playing
see that?
Playing with fire. And there's a big, giant picture of a fire.
Yeah. And it's the whole front page of the paper, the only story. And it's not 1 week, but it was four front pages.
Wow.
And inside, there's like four pages of journalism. And the subheading, I'll read it to you, says, a deceptive campaign by industry brought toxic flame retardants into our homes and into our bodies, and the chemicals don't even work as promised. So the word is out. You know, I sort of feel like it's the emperor's new clothes. Everyone's putting all these flame retardants in their furniture that end up in their bodies, and there's no benefit, you know? And so I've been saying that for a long time. A lot of what's in these articles is actually in published papers of mine, but, you know, who reads the published papers? But when it's, you know, front page news I think there have been about seven stories now on the front page of the Tribune, all about the lies and deception of the chemical industry, the harm from the chemicals, and the lack of fire benefit. So, and the senator from Illinois is demanding that something be done, and I think something will be done. So it's really good news.
Yeah, I saw it picked up additionally in the New York Times. So there was an additional story that came from that Chicago Tribune story that I think has gotten a lot of attention as well. So it's being picked up. The story is getting around, which is definitely good news.
We should tell people the URL is, I think, the top of the page. Well, yeah, that shows the forefront page, but there's a URL. It might be good if at some point you could give people the URL. I think it's like Playing with Fire, but I can't remember. But yeah, so it's Sundays. Nick Kristof is a great columnist in the New York Times, and I think he did a very brilliant column. So if people just go to Nick Kristof on the New York Times op-ed page, they can read his column, which is all about how this flame retardant story is really an example of what's wrong with money politics in America. And so, you know, I think with the word out, you remember back in the 70s, we were able to get the toxic flame retardants out of kids' pajamas a few months after the word came out. Now, it's taken years to get the word out now, but it's out. And it's so fortunate you have this program now. You can contribute. You know, your listeners can hear it. And I hope you'll give them the website. You know, they can find Nick Kristof's Sunday column, I'm sure. And he actually links to it. So if they find Nick Kristof's column, they can just link to the whole series. And it's great investigative journalism.
Yeah, in terms of questions that people often ask about these chemicals, you say, okay, the perspective you're coming from here is the chemicals are added to products and there's no benefit. But is there harm aside from the smoke that we talked about earlier?
Oh, there's huge harm. They come out and they go into our bodies and it's hard to believe, but there are hundreds of scientists all over the world studying these chemicals. And what they find is particularly if a female has the chemicals. This is a female animal or human in her body during pregnancy. It impacts brain development and reproductive organ development in the fetus. So in animals, hyperactivity, lowered sperm count, a whole range of things. And actually, in humans, they found that when the mom has higher levels, it takes her twice as long to become pregnant. Her baby's birth weight is lower, lowered IQ in children, lowered sperm count in men. And, you know, human results should not be the test for toxicity. Humans should not be experimental animals. But because these chemicals have been at our homes, like two pound levels in our homes for 30 years, we're finding these human health effects. You know, maybe a few dozen human health studies, but many hundreds of animal health studies. So a lot of them look like thyroxin, so they are related to thyroid problems. They're related to endocrine disruption, and a number of them are cancer-causing. And so they're sitting there in our couch and our nursing pillow and coming out constantly and ending up in us. So it's a really sad, very sad thing.
Is there any safe level of these compounds, or is it any level is deleterious?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, we're exposed to a lot of toxics and they all add up. So, for example, my story, which anyway, I sort of whatever. I had my cat back when I started doing this work. She went from being like a 15-pound cat to like a 5-pound cat. And the vet diagnosed hyperthyroid disease. And he said when he went to vet school, he was told that disease didn't exist in cats. He'd never see it in his career. And now there's this mysterious epidemic of hyperthyroid disease in cats. And he thought maybe it was a chemical, some new chemical in the last 20 years or so. And I said, oh, Penta, the flame retardant that's in all our furniture. And so he looked on VetLine and found a veterinary epidemiology study in Illinois. So we sent a sample of Midnight's blood and my house dust to Illinois. And the vet called and she said, your house dust is the highest I've ever seen. It's unbelievable. So I had like 97 parts per billion of Penta in my dust. And so I was able to test my furniture, which you usually can't do, but, you know, because I'm involved in this field, I borrowed this $40,000 XRF testing gun and all the furniture in my house had Penta. So I got rid of all my furniture, and 2 years later, my dust level went from 97 parts per billion to 3 parts per billion. So that's better, but I'd rather have it be zero, frankly.
Yeah, and the 3 parts per billion, do you think that's just environmental contamination, just blowing in on the breeze, or do you think it's coming from products you bring into the house?
It's according to people, environmental engineers who study indoor air, these SVOCs make thin films on your walls and windows. And so it takes 5-10 years to get it all out. So I keep my doors and my windows open all the time and I vacuum a lot. And in a few years it'll go away, but I can't really sell my house and buy another one because the other house might be worse. My house is 3 parts per billion, but I'm hoping to get to zero. No, it's not.
Yeah,
from outside.
You just have to wait.
Inside. From inside. Yeah.
Wow. So if you were to test somewhere outdoors, are there low levels of stuff like Penta just everywhere now that we've been using it for so long?
A little. So the EPA did a big study of Penta and they determined that about 90% of the dose that we get into our bodies comes from dust in our homes and about 10% comes from the food supply. But people believe as time goes on, I mean, Penta got banned in 2005. So as couches get older and they get dropped into landfills where the Penta leaches out, or the dust in our homes, which contains Penta, gets washed into sewage treatment plants, the Penta is escaping our homes and ending up in our food supply. You know, the sewage sludge gets spread on fields. NOAA did a study of they did a study of sediments and bivalves all around the coast of the U.S., and they found Penta everywhere there was a city in the sediments and bivalves. And then it goes up the marine food chain. You know, so the highest levels in the world are in marine mammals off California, which is very sad.
Yeah, that is sad. And there was a study that came out just this last week talking about the fact that we're taking water from our water reserves under the continents. We're taking water for agricultural uses, for household uses, industrial uses. That water is then being pumped out, goes into rivers, ends up out in the oceans. We're filling up the oceans. We're raising the water level, the ocean levels, with water from land. And that water is probably going to contain stuff like penta, stuff like tris, all sorts of chemicals.
So I'm optimistic. I think we're at a point where there's enough data and enough science, and it's really taking the science to decision makers, bringing it to their attention. And I think, you know, that it's time to change our California standards so we can have furniture that doesn't have these chemicals and is more fire safe. And, you know, I really hope the TSCA reform can happen in Washington, D.C. So chemicals need to be shown safe before they're put into products. You know, we should not be the experimental animals, you know, being subject to toxic chemicals when there's no health information. You know, right now, did you know that no information is required for chemicals? And 2/3 of them have no information at all. So that needs to change. And I think maybe the times are right that it will. You know, if we can really bring science to decision makers, we can change some of these things.
That would be wonderful. There was a study that you sent out earlier by Heather Stapleton and a colleague related to PBDEs in toddlers. As the mother of a toddler, this kind of information is very applicable, and I'm interested in it. Could you talk a little bit about this chemical and what she found?
Well, the chemical, I call it penta.
Penta is penta.
That's the chemical that was in my couch and my cat and my dust. Uh-huh. And the question is, how does it end up inside of us? Because Heather and I did a paper together about a year ago where we looked at 100 baby products, and 80% of them contain toxic flame retardants. But the children's product manufacturers, who were really not well informed, they'd been informed by the chemical industry, said, well, maybe it's in the baby product, but it doesn't come out of the baby product and it doesn't end up in the child. But the reality, if you talk to an environmental engineer who studies air, is they're SVOCs, semi-volatile organics, so they're continually coming out of the products into dust. And you can correlate what's in the couch with what's in the dust, but then can you correlate what's in the dust with what's in the child? And so Heather found, using hand wipes, that the levels that were on children's hands, toddlers' hands, correlated with the levels that were inside their bodies,
which makes sense. Kids crawl on the ground, or they're down on the ground a lot, and then they're teething, they're putting their hands to their mouths, and
exactly
just ingesting it.
Toddlers have 3 times the level of their mothers in a lot of studies, because the chemicals go through the placenta, they're in breast milk, and they're in dust, and that's not a good time, you know. So we really, but I think we're on the verge, I hope, of changing the standard, because the fact that there's no fire safety benefit means that it makes sense to move to a standard that doesn't have the toxic chemicals and does have a fire safety benefit. There's really nothing to lose.
Yeah, in the study that Heather Stapleton published also, it suggested there's a discrepancy between different socioeconomic groups. Why would there necessarily be that kind of difference?
Well, one reason is penta stopped being made in 2004. It was voluntarily phased out, and it was also, there are only 21 chemicals globally banned, and it's one of those 21. So it was banned. And so since 2004, penta was replaced with chlorinated tris, the same chemical we'd gotten out of kids' pajamas, and another chemical called Firemaster, which contains 4 ingredients that look reasonably toxic. But if you have old furniture, so if you bought your furniture since 2005, you won't have penta in it. You'll have tris or Firemaster, which probably aren't good. But if you're studying penta, homes with older furniture will have more penta. The furniture industry estimates that furniture has 3 owners of about 10 years each. So that means we're going to have penta in our furniture for, you know, another whatever, 18 years to come.
Right.
But it will be increasingly in the homes of, you know, students, low income, people who buy used furniture.
Right.
But that doesn't mean those people who buy new furniture necessarily have something healthier. They might have Tristan Meyermaster, but those are harder to measure and haven't been as well studied. It's taken, you know, Pent has been used for 30 years, and that's taken that long to get the human health information. So it takes a really long time to prove things in humans. By the time you've proved things in humans, it's like way too late. The chemicals are out in the environment. They're in everybody's body. You know, you can't call them back once they're out there. That's why it's so important to test chemicals before they go out into the environment. And that's right. What we're trying to do in Washington, D.C., is give the EPA that authority. The EPA is great. Yeah. They know a lot. They know which chemicals are harmful. But all they can do is work with the manufacturers to make voluntary agreements. You know, please, your chemical's very harmful. Could you please stop making it? That's about all they can do.
Which is, it just seems so strange. I understand that the chemical manufacturing industry is making a lot of money off of this, but there's a certain balance to protecting the health of your customers over time. Your customers, if they're going to come back to you, I mean, you'd think that there would be a business sense there of protecting your customers in a sense, as opposed to just exploiting them for that short-term gain. But I guess there's a very complex supply chain.
Yeah. So it's the chemical industry puts the chemicals in the foam, and then the foam is bought by the furniture industry, and then the furniture industry sells it to the furniture stores. So there's quite a few steps between the chemical industry and the consumer. And in things like electronics, the supply chain is so complicated. I know Sun was saying they really didn't want DECA in any of their products, and for 6 years they've been saying that, and they still had DECA in their products. Because, you know, there's so much, this supply chain complexity is very, very problematic. So you can't get that sort of quick response. And also the sorts of health problems that are caused by these chemicals, it's not like you put some on your hand and your hand burns, or you get a rash, or you get sick. The health effects are things that cancer 20, 30 years later. Or, right. You know, your baby has lower IQ, but you don't really learn that, you know? So it's not like an immediate effect. It's very hard I don't see a market model that's going to work for regulating this, except, I mean, one of the things we're hoping is outside California, people can legally buy furniture without flame retardants. And I think after reading the Chicago Tribune series, or anyone who comes to my talks immediately wants to know where they can buy safer furniture. So one of the things we're trying to do is put together on our website a directory of furniture that does not contain flame retardants. We have not yet done that, but we're having some summer interns from UC Berkeley, and we're hoping maybe we can get them to start gathering that information. Because I think consumers, given the choice, knowing there's no fire safety benefit, that the chemicals are toxic and they're continually coming out of furniture and products, we would choose products without the flame retardants if they don't live in California.
Right. I think that kind of and with the internet, you can purchase items from companies all over the place and be able to access DECA-less furniture?
Well, DECA isn't in furniture, but Penta is. It's illegal to bring furniture into California that does not have that does not meet the California standard. So actually, companies will not sell furniture in California.
Wow.
If you're in California, you don't really have a choice except to get furniture that doesn't have foam. If you look, some things have polyester, some things have cotton or wool. So you just need to choose other materials.
Yeah. In the light of the electronics and getting rid of DECA, there was you sent me an email earlier with the headline that a new flammability standard for TV enclosures has been prevented. And you mentioned in the email that the candle flame test has been required for TV enclosures. So the plastic box that...
It wasn't required. The chemical industry was trying to require it.
The plastic box that encases the electronics should not burn with a candle. Has anyone ever shown that the plastic box of a television will burn from a candle flame very quickly?
Well, I think it could, but if you imagine a modern TV hanging on a wall, it's hard to imagine how anyone could start a fire except holding the candle to the TV. Because, you know, if you put a candle under your TV, candles burn down, not up. So you'd have to hold the candle to the TV. And, you know, if you were going to do arson in your house, you probably wouldn't do it with a candle on your TV. That doesn't look like the best way to start a fire. But nonetheless, the chemical industry have been working for 10 years to have an international standard so all the TVs in the world will resist a candle flame. And then the plastic has to be 20% flame retardant, which they would really, really like. And again, in the Chicago Tribune article, they've got a great analysis. The study on which this is based was a Swedish study where they found a suburb of Stockholm had 32 fires, and 8 of them were fires in TVs. And so they said, well, 1/4 of all fires are caused by TV fires by candles, which they weren't even fires. And then they extrapolated to all of Europe.
Not an electronic short. That wouldn't be the first.
Right. No, it's ridiculous. But anyway, that, you know, with a lot of money and a lot of push, they almost, it was very close. They almost, and you know, it was defeated just this week. That there won't be this new requirement for the world that all the TV enclosures have to meet a candle flame requirement. But I heard a rumor that they're still trying to do it again, you know, that they'll never give up because they make so much money from it. So this is, but that's why it's so great that the Chicago Tribune and Nick Kristof's column really exposed the candle standards for what they are. I mean, when you hear a candle standard, the deal is to meet a candle standard, you almost have to use chemicals. If you think about it, if you have a standard of a candle on foam or plastic, there's no other way. So in other words, your couch could be covered in steel. But if there's a candle standard for the foam has to have chemicals to, you know, to be able to make bare plastic or bare foam resist a candle, you have to put in chemicals. That's what the chemical industry wants. So they're always trying to have candle standards on everything they can come up with, because there are many other better ways to avoid fires. And in fact, to avoid, they were trying to do the candle standard on computers. Can you imagine how many computer fires there are from candles? You know, who works on their computer by candlelight, right? But anyway, I think that's one of the reasons Apple went to metal and glass computers, just to avoid the whole candle standard issue. So, but so there are other techniques like metal, glass. Better yet, if you don't want a fire, have a sprinkler system in your house. Smoke alarms apparently are really effective. We now have fire-safe cigarettes and fire-safe candles. So looking at the source of ignition is a lot smarter than trying to put chemicals in, you know, in everything in our homes. You know, our books are always going to burn. You know, we're not going to make all of our, you know, we just can't make everything fire-safe. But we can think about, we have fire-safe, kid-proof lighters, matches are kid-proof. Candles are now fire safe. Cigarettes are fire safe. All that's great. And then why do we need chemicals and everything?
Wait, cigarettes are fire safe?
Yeah.
Yep. Don't they burn?
So, so the deal is, this is a very interesting story. Actually, our policy director, Andrew McGuire, has a MacArthur for this work. Cigarettes have in the past been constructed so if you put down your cigarette, it will smolder for 20 or 30 minutes to the very end and start a fire. But if you make a cigarette fire safe, it's really a simple thing. Along the body of the cigarette, you make a little band where the paper is twice as thick. And when the smoldering cigarette hits the band where the paper is twice as thick, it goes out because it doesn't get oxygen. So instead of smoldering for 30 minutes and starting a fire, cigarettes, all cigarettes in America now are fire safe. And they can only smolder for 3 or 4 minutes, which isn't long enough to start a fire. And Andrew McGuire started this work in the 70s. He fought the cigarette industry for 30 years to get fire safe cigarettes. And interestingly, you can read about it in the Tribune, the people he was fighting from the Tobacco Institute. Some of them are the leading people in calling for flame retardants in furniture. They came up with the idea that it's, because the main scenario for fire deaths is someone sitting on a couch or in bed, they fall asleep. Cigarette smolders, starts fire. So the cigarette industry claimed it wasn't the smoldering cigarette that was a problem. It was the fact that the couch didn't contain flame retardants. So instead of dealing with a cigarette, you just put flame retardants in everything. And so the same person, it was somebody from the Tobacco Institute who was leading the charge for fire retardants. So that whole candle standard thing on TVs and computers, that was led by this ex-cigarette industry person named Peter Sparber, who the Tribune writes about. So there's all kinds of great stories in the Tribune about intrigue, yeah. cigarette industry, chemical industry.
It's like how it's all tied in together. Yeah, things you would think would be distantly related are actually much more closely related. It's really, yeah, it's a fascinating, fascinating story. Arlene, we're getting to the end of the hour here, and I really, really appreciate your time talking about all the chemicals and the products around us. I'm just wondering, as we get to the end, is there no safe in California, since there has to be the fire safety chemicals? We're going to count that out. But
let's
not
call them fire safety chemicals. We'll call them toxic flame retardants.
Toxic flame retardants in the foams. Are there any foams elsewhere that do not contain these chemicals, or is it, if it's a foam, it contains the chemicals?
It's not all, but most. Polyester wouldn't contain them. You know, other materials mm-hmm. wouldn't contain them. We actually, if you're going to mention our website, because we have yeah. on our website a lot of specific information, consumer sheet on how to reduce the toxics in your home, a safe kids sheet, you might look on it on our homepage, which talks about toddler and baby products and how to reduce toxics. So there are choices that we can make. Juvenile products particularly often will have polyester, and that, as far as I know, doesn't contain flame retardants. You can make choices, and things like hand washing help. You know, just like for lead, it's in dust. So if you vacuum with a HEPA filter, you wet mop your floors, you keep the dust down, that all helps. But really, we don't want these things in our homes or our bodies, or especially our kids' bodies.
Yeah, if there are negative health effects, if there are developmental effects, especially these long-lived chemicals as they build up in the environment, it's just not going to lead anywhere great.
No.
We want the best
are you
for our
what?
Kids.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, I'd just like to thank Arlene Bloom for joining us here on Dr. Kiki Science Hour, and for all the information about toxic flame retardant chemicals in our homes and in our environment. Be sure to visit arlenebloom.com. That's Arlene, ArleneBlum.com for more information about Arlene. And for information on her Green Science Policy Institute, go to greensciencepolicy.org. And at greensciencepolicy.org, you will see information about their Safe Kids campaign, where you can learn about flame retardants in baby products and things you can do to keep those retardant chemicals out of your home or minimize them. Flame retardants in pets, updated news, so news about these chemicals as they pertain to the science that's actually being done. And somebody in the chat room, as I was watching, was trolling a little bit and trying to say that there need to be other people who are replicating her findings. Well, she's not actually doing this science research hands-on right now. She is working with scientists all over the United States and internationally who are doing this research. She is bringing the research to a point where it can be used to generate good policy for ourselves and our children and our lives into the future. This is not just a single study that she did yesterday and we're talking about here. We're talking about a lot of information that has been compiled from many studies over many years. So at some point, I hope that people start listening to her. And I do hope that the Chicago Tribune story generates a lot of attention. It's already been picked up by the New York Times and as well by NPR. And I think there is a conversation that is heating up, so to speak. Anyway, like I said, arlenebloom.com or greensciencepolicy.org for more information. I am Dr. Kiki, and this has been Dr. Kiki Science Hour. I will be back next week. And next week, I am, who am I talking with next week? It's the 31st. I am speaking with people from the Kepler Observatory. So we're going to be talking about that evaporating planet that I mentioned in the science news summary at the beginning of the show. Next week, Kepler and things that Kepler is finding. I'm looking forward to that and hope that you will be too. In the meantime, you can follow my sciencey pursuits on Twitter. I'm at Dr. Kiki. On Facebook, Dr. Kiki is my page. And I'm Kiki Sanford on Google+. Additionally, if you want to view past episodes of this program, go to twit.tv/Kiki. Also, you can find it on YouTube in the twit.tv archive, in the Twit TV channel. I think that's what it's called on YouTube, using this technology we've got. And for more sciencey goodness, you can tune into This Week in Science, which broadcasts live on Thursday evenings from Twit, and other stuff I do, Justin TV, on Fridays at noon Pacific time. Everything Pacific time, because I am so California-centric. I will see you next week. Thanks for tuning into my Science Hour. All I ask is this 1 hour a week, even though I've got a lot more hours that you can choose from. But really, 1 hour a week, it's not so bad, right? I do hope that this one makes your world a whole lot more interesting. And, oh yeah, it's time for your science meditation of the week.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. And launch of the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket as NASA turns to the private sector to resupply the International Space Station.
Maximum aerodynamic pressure.
Propulsion's performing nominally, starting stage 2 engine chill.